is The End User, episode 118 for Tuesday, December 18th, Future Taylor Hacker Prime. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I am Futurist Prime Taylor Moore.
That's a good title to have.
Yeah, Futurist Prime. Yeah, you like that?
That's good.
I like it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that should be permanent, maybe.
I'll stick with it.
Well, we skipped a week last week because I wasn't feeling too great, but I'm back at 100%, so we're good to go for this week, and it turns out we've got a heap of news to get through.
Yeah, Google didn't skip any weeks. They have just been chugging along. So a whole bunch of new apps, new services, but they're also getting rid of a lot of old stuff. They've been doing some spring cleaning this December.
Well, and that kind of goes in line with what they've been doing. They've been ditching services left and right recently in an attempt to clean up shop, I guess. So they're cleaning up things, whether that means adding them or subtracting them.
Right. Okay. So how about we start with the new stuff?
Okay.
Well, the biggest one is definitely going to be Google Maps for iOS. So the iPhone finally gets its Google Maps back. And already well over 10 million people have downloaded it.
Yeah, I mean, everyone was clamoring for this. As soon as iOS 6 came out and their maps didn't prove to be as useful as Google Maps, people have been clamoring. So there's no surprise there that as soon as the news got out that they released this thing, everyone would just jump on it immediately. I bet you they're close to flat now. I bet you they had all of their users that were going to download it up front.
Well, I think their version of flat is probably 100 times what other app developers get in a day.
Yeah, that's absolutely true as well.
Anyway, I've tried this already on the iPhone 5, and it, in terms of sheer usability, it blew Apple Maps out of the water. You know, it's barely even worth mentioning Nokia's Here Maps. They're just on different playing fields. It's as soon as you open it up, you can tell immediately that it's faster and easier to use than the current Apple Maps or even the Apple Maps that was powered by Google from the previous version. But there are a couple of flaws. For one, it is very aggressive about sending all of your information back to Google where you're using it. So there's a lot more information coming back out of your phone and into Google servers. For one thing, stuff like traffic, you know, they track your phone to get better traffic reports. But other personal information gets sent as well. And it's tricky to turn it off, but Lifehacker has a good way of figuring that out. The other big problem that I've been hearing a lot is that there is absolutely no way to access your contacts from within the app. So if you have an address saved somewhere, whether it's on your phone's contacts or in your Google contacts, and you can log into your Google account, but it still doesn't get to your contacts. So you won't be able to look somebody up, plug in their address, and get directions.
So I wouldn't be able to, for example, look you up and then navigate to your house. Is that what you're after?
Not from inside the app, no. You'd have to look me up in your address book and then copy my address and plug it in and then get directions. Good thing, though, is that you can get transit directions back. And it's finally updated with all of the transit info that Google has in their main map servers. Even with all the different tweaks, like you can set whether you want to take buses or trains, whether you want to walk more or less, or what time you even want to leave. So that's really great. And I've already used that a few times, and it was fantastic.
And they have biking directions now, too, don't they?
Yes, but they don't have biking directions inside the new app.
Ah, so it's Android exclusive for the moment.
I suppose so.
Android and web exclusive for the moment, I suppose.
Right. The new app is really great. I have yet to try the directions in a car. I'd be interested to see how the traffic compares to iPhone. It's probably better, but who knows? And I'd also want to know how it handles turn-by-turn directions. That's one thing that I think Apple got exactly right.
Yeah, it's always been kind of funny because the turn-by-turn directions on Android are absolutely fantastic, and they were never there for iOS for whatever reason.
Well, Google and Apple just couldn't agree on the terms of it. The big irony here is that now they both have it on iOS, but they had to split up their apps in order to get to the same place.
Yeah, they had to break up in order to implement these things.
Right. So in addition to Maps, there is a new version of the Gmail for iOS, which is great. And I've been using it because my email stopped working for reasons that we'll get to, my email on my iPhone. So I had to turn on the Gmail app and try it. And it is pretty great. It's fluid. It's fast. I have some complaints with it, but it does what it's supposed to, which is good because
you used the Windows terms there.
Fluid and fast.
Yeah, fast and fluid.
Ah, well, it is that. Hey, you can see a lot of similar design elements actually between the Gmail app and the iOS app.
Yeah, the native Gmail apps are just fantastic. Do they not blow away the iOS mail client?
They don't. I wouldn't say they blow them away. They're nice. They're very usable. All the functionality is pretty much equivalent across the board, but they definitely don't blow away the built-in mail client. The mail client's pretty good in iOS.
Yeah. Well, there's something about the Gmail apps that just kind of works better for whatever reason that I've always found. Trying to sync the mail back and forth has been frustrating in the past, and trying to shoehorn all mail providers into the same interface that doesn't really make sense for that mail provider has been a little frustrating. And, you know, it works pretty well. It works decently on Windows Phone, except for the way that Gmail does conversations gets interrupted by Windows Phone, which is a little unsettling. But, you know, it's kind of good enough. But at least for Android and iOS, I always felt like the Gmail apps were always better. And there isn't one for Windows Phone.
Well, maybe they'll get there soon. They might still be trucking. We don't know.
Yeah, I kind of doubt it. But maybe we'll have to save that prediction for later in the year or something.
Right. So there's one more new app for iOS, and that's an updated version of the YouTube app, which they came out once YouTube stopped being a native app in iOS 6. But when they came out with it, it was fine if you had an iPhone 4S, but that's just about it. You couldn't stream anything to a TV or computer or other device. It didn't have iPhone 5 support, and it had no iPad support at all. So the new version finally has native iPad support, and it looks great. I got to play around with it.
It's widescreen.
Native iPhone 5 support, which is widescreen.
Good. Okay, that's what I was after. I wanted to make sure you didn't get the double letterbox thing that you were talking about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, the main place that I was getting at that really bothered me was on the TV streaming through AirPlay. So with the old way, I had my 16:9 phone and I'm looking at a YouTube video. And the only way I could get that to my 16:9 TV was to turn on mirroring for the phone. And then it would shrink it to the size of the app and then shrink it again for a letterbox. So I had this big black bar around, which was really annoying. But all of those problems are fixed now.
And it only took good to hear.
2 months, so that's good. So there's another app. This one is for Android. And lest you think Android's been forgotten in all of these Google updates, I mean, Chris, you already mentioned before that a lot of these Android apps, they're generally way better than their iOS equivalents. And better than Windows Phone too, especially if there is no equivalent.
Yeah, on Windows Phone there are some third-party apps to do some of the Google stuff. Like there's a Google Maps app from a third party, but they don't have the first-party apps because I guess you know, Windows Phone just doesn't have the market share to support that for the moment.
Right. So there's this new Android app which was made by Google and was previously available for the iPad called Snapseed, and it's an image editor. It's basically Google's competition to iPhoto for iPhone. Would you say that's about accurate, Chris?
Yeah, it sounds about right.
And
so looks pretty competent.
Yeah, it looks great. It used to be $5 and iPad only. Now it's free and available everywhere, except for Windows Phone. Sorry again, Chris.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm at peace with my Windows Phone. That's okay. there are a number of editing apps that get the job done, but none of them look as interesting as this one, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I have not had a chance to try Snapseed yet, but for free, I think it's a very highly competitive option for iPhoto, at least on iOS, and for Android, I'm sure it's even better.
Yeah, that's just kind of how they do things. The iPhone has enough market share that they should be making the apps, but I feel like they don't want to make them quite as good as Android.
Chris, you know what? I actually left out one iOS app. Can you believe it?
Oh, well, we can reverse course a little bit.
All right. So they came out with another YouTube app for iPhone, and it's called YouTube Capture. So it's designed specifically to record video and share it to YouTube. The amazing thing here is that they've actually outdone the built-in options inside iOS.
Right. So, well, that kind of makes sense because YouTube is their property. Well, I don't know. I suppose because Apple just programs to the interface that Google publishes. So, but you think this is better than the built-in Apple sharing abilities?
Well, the built-in camera app could already do some editing, and it could already share directly to YouTube or Facebook or Twitter. And it had all of these features, but this YouTube Capture app makes it even better. It makes it easier and faster to share to YouTube or Facebook or Twitter or Google Plus. And it also has more video editing capabilities, which Apple reserves for their premium apps.
Right. So they add Google Plus into the mix, and that's to be expected, right? They're like all their bonuses and stuff are tied to Google Plus's success. So they're really trying to make that happen, and I guess this is part of it.
And the main thing here, though, is that you have a lot more video editing capability inside the app.
Right. And I wonder if they're taking what they learned about the web video editor and kind of applying that stuff downstream to the mobile stuff.
I'm sure they have. And then I bet they're taking a lot of what they learned inside the mobile apps and are bringing them back to the site. In fact, just a few days ago, they updated the look of the YouTube website, and they made it a lot easier to subscribe and watch YouTube channels.
Right, so I don't know. I didn't even notice that they had done anything, but
you wouldn't really notice unless you went to a channel page. It's not
it's
not particularly obvious just from the videos.
Because, you know, I read this article and I went to check it out. But just in my normal use of YouTube as it goes, I didn't really notice anything had changed.
But it seems to me that YouTube channels are incredibly popular and they're getting the attention that they deserve.
Yeah, you know, that's true. And I really don't use them for what it's worth. So people are using them and I'm an outlier in this one, I think.
Right. I mean, as our futurist prime, I treat them like regular television channels.
Do you put them into your Google Reader somehow?
Don't be ridiculous, Chris. Google Reader was so 2009. Well, that is pretty much it for their new apps and code and features and stuff. So let's talk for a little bit about the stuff that they are getting rid of, which is really, I have some problems with this.
Yeah, I have a lot of problems with this.
So the big thing is that they are getting rid of the ability to sign up for Google Apps for your domain. The free personal version is going away. So it's all going to be $50 a year and up now. And now, don't you use this version, Chris?
I do. Now, I signed up for it in a little different way because I started with Google Blogger, you know, blogspot.com. And I signed up for the custom domain, and they just kind of threw Gmail at me for free. And I was okay, you know, there we go. I didn't even know that was an option. And they just kind of threw Google Apps at me for free. And now I've used it long enough, and I've become dependent upon it. And you're not going to be able to sign up for a new account for now.
Unless you pay for it.
Right. Unless you pay $50 a year for it. And to be quite honest, 50% or $50 a year is not that much for what you get. So that's actually not so bad. But, you know, it's I'm going from $10 a year for what it was to $50 a year. And that is kind of a big jump to swallow. Although you could make the argument that I was getting so much for free before that it was actually more valuable than what I was paying for it.
Well, but what about, I mean, you can still do the same thing. I mean, get email at least. And the other services, you could get it from Microsoft. You can get it from Hotmail.com. Or you could get it from Yahoo.
Yeah, that's true. You could do all of these things. And, you know, it's something I'll have to look into. And I haven't really digested what the landscape is right now because I've been so happy with that. But, yeah, I mean, Outlook.com is out there now, and they're fantastic, right? So I'll have to see if I'll have to see what the picture looks like for switching my domain over there.
Yeah, I'm in this boat as well. I just want email for this new domain that I've set up. I don't want to pay $50 a year for that, so I've got to pick one of the other options.
Yeah, so we'll have to see how this goes. I mean, it is relatively shady that they threw all of this stuff at you for free and then are just going to remove it over time. You know, it's not gone yet. They do have this notion of letting you continue to use it for a little while, but you know, you've got to imagine that eventually it's just going to go away for the people that were using it. And now, I also haven't confirmed that for sure. Is that the case?
I think that people who had it will still be able to use it,
right,
for a while at least. But even those people are going to run into some problems, because if that wasn't bad enough, Google has also decided to kill off its Microsoft Exchange servers for all free accounts. So it's only going to be those paid accounts where you can get a Microsoft Exchange server syncing your mail to your computer or your phone.
Yeah, and I use this a lot on my Windows phone. I had my custom domain email. They really hit me hard with this one.
Yeah. I used it too. I loved having Exchange for my Gmail on my phone. And they claimed that it's not going to get shut off until January 30th. But I noticed it shut down at the end of November.
Oh, really? Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, I don't know what happened, but this seems to be the only logical explanation.
It's got to be something else going on there. I can't imagine that was the case.
I tried to get it back. I couldn't. That's why I switched to the Gmail app.
Good luck calling Google support, I guess, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so this is it hasn't been shut off for me yet. I'm still using it. It's still syncing. I'm still doing what I've always done with Windows Phone. So it will be very interesting to see what happens when that day rolls around. And doesn't this smack of some anti-competitiveness?
I think it does, yeah. I mean, it's hard to look at Google and see their website decisions and figure out why it is they're doing any of these things. I'm sure cost savings is a big part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this and I think of Internet Explorer right away as Internet Explorer got in trouble because it was on there by default and it was free and it was competent enough that people would use it. And so Google throws out all of these services for free with Google Apps for people like me who went ahead and used them. And then eventually over time, they're just removing them and I'm stuck with the lock-in of the services that I'm using. Now the difference there, I suppose, is that I'm not sure you could claim any notion of a monopoly here, but it certainly is anti-competitive and anti-consumer to the people that were using it. Now, I don't know what I'm sure way more people use gmail.com instead of a custom domain. So, but they have a ton of users that are using these things. So it's a pretty huge move for them.
Yeah.
So I guess we should keep an eye on Office 365 and Outlook.com and see if they become a little bit more common, huh?
Well, you and I will both have to. We have to make a decision about what to do now that Google's canceling all these services.
Yeah, so I don't know. I still have to take I still have to take a survey of what's out there, what's better, and what costs what, and we'll have to make a decision.
Yep, I'm not looking forward to it. But
no, me neither.
We'll have to figure that out. Well, okay, good news for some Google users, particularly ones who speak Italian, French, Japanese, and Russian, because they're finally getting what we English speakers have had in our knowledge graphs. Now, that's when you type something into Google and it gives you kind of a little mini Wikipedia article about whatever it is you typed in.
Yeah, that's really neat. So we always do this. This is always the case with our podcast, just because of the nature of the format we have. We're really talking about our experience with technology and what that means and what we're doing. And we always forget that, you know, stuff like Netflix isn't available everywhere and that kind of thing. So it's good to see them roll out something that we take for granted to other people that's really useful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and just another note, Google has also hired Ray Kurzweil, who invented one of the first electronic keyboards, amongst a couple other inventions. He's kind of a prolific inventor and thinker, and the tag word always associated with him is futurist, because he's the author of the Singularity is Near.
Yeah, I was going to say the other tag word associated with him is singularity.
Yeah, which is basically, he thinks that if he can live long enough, he will be able to download his consciousness into a computer of some sort and live forever. That's the that's the gist of it, at least.
Sounds great. I could go for that.
Yeah, you'll have your brain in an iPhone.
Right. Well, he and I are both futurists, so we tend to agree on a lot of things.
Yeah, I guess that's right. So he's going to be working for Google as the director of engineering. So he's apparently he's starting today, and I can see him. I can't see him contributing like code or anything like that, but man, as a mentor, I forget it. This is kind of fantastic. And
yeah,
I wouldn't have ever guessed this coming. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it is really crazy. But I think it's great. I was really surprised by his title, director of engineering. I mean, I thought he would get more of an honorary position, but I don't know. Good for Ray and good for Google.
Yeah, you'd think he'd get something like
just a board membership or something.
Or like director of innovation or something like that. Something more along those lines.
Director of singularity studies.
Singularity director. When Google starts offering consciousness download options, he will be right there.
That will be Google Class 2.5.
2.5. Wow.
Yeah, I'm calling it right now.
You're pushing up the scale there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was thinking a long while from now.
Nope, 2.5.
All right. Well, we've had a lot of top news because Google absolutely went insane over the last 2 weeks. But let's get into the afterburners. What do we got? Oh, and strap yourself in. Be safe.
Incredibly annoying thing about commercials being louder than the shows that they're airing on has finally been legislated into non-existence. It's called the CALM Act, Commercial Advertisement Loudness Mitigation Act, which passed 2 years ago but has finally gone into effect this week. They've made it a legally binding requirement that says that the commercials must be the same average volume or quieter than the TV shows they're on.
That is perhaps one of the best acronyms I've seen in a long time.
Yep.
So Qualcomm has invested $120 million into Sharp, who's teetering on the brink and holds a whole ton of debt. They have $10 billion outstanding dollars in debt. So they're hoping to right that ship a little bit with an investment from Qualcomm. It would be industry shaking for a company like Sharp to go out of business.
Yeah, I like how you said that they're teetering on the brink, because not only are they on the brink of bankruptcy, but they're also just about to push out the best advancements in LCD display technology that we've seen in a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, just because they're doing poorly financially doesn't mean they can't pump out great products. That we've seen this with technology companies, maybe not over and over again, but it happens quite a bit where some company has fantastic technology and they just can't figure out the margins. And as a consequence, they start to lose money.
They are the only ones doing research and development on the kind of displays that we are going to see in everything from phones to tablets to medium-sized TVs in the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, so hopefully they can pull back from the edge.
Well, $120 million ought to do it for a little while.
Yeah, that'll keep them afloat.
Well, if we had had a podcast in 2003, we probably would have talked about how Cisco acquired Linksys, and ever since then, all of their routers and equipment and other things have all been Linksys by Cisco. But Cisco has now decided we're going to sell Linksys again.
That didn't last too long. Well, no, I guess
Right.
that was a long time for for them to
But they
own
went through this
Linksys.
big rebranding. They combined all of the companies. They made a bunch of design decisions, like canceling the flip camera technology and that whole line. And yeah, now they're just done.
Yeah, see,
Linksys is without a home.
I wonder if the margins on these routers was just tiny. I mean, these routers are so cheap, and I wonder how much they cost to make, and I wonder if the margins were just too slim to hold on to a good business. So I don't know. We'll see what happens to Linksys. I mean, everyone needs
Innovate
a
or die,
router.
I guess.
Everyone needs a router, right?
Yeah, most people need more than one.
Yeah. So maybe it's Netgear getting really competitive or something. I don't know, but it'll be interesting to see what happens to them. I'll always remember them for the you remember the old blue and black Linksys routers, the WRT54G.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I still have one.
Yeah, I still have one too, and that will permanently be burned in my brain as to what Linksys is, that particular router. I think that's true of a lot of people.
Absolutely. But that was, in fact, a Cisco router.
Well, so we'll see what happens there. So Disney has announced that Netflix is going to be its exclusive distributor starting in 2016. So actually quite a bit of ways from actually happening. But Netflix really striking a deal there. Disney
Yeah,
is huge.
this is interesting because this is the kind of deal where until this month, you never would have heard of this kind of deal being made with anyone but a TV network.
Yeah, that's right. This is the domain of the cable guys, not Netflix. Netflix is
Right.
really stepping out of its boundaries here, I think.
Yeah, and considering Disney has its own portfolio of TV networks, it's pretty surprising.
So just in line for Kansas City with their gigabit Ethernet, Seattle is also announcing its own municipal gigabit internet services. So this is this is very interesting, and I don't really care if it's in Seattle or Kansas City. I would like it to be here where I am, and that
Yeah,
hasn't
no
happened
kidding. Now
yet.
they haven't rolled it out yet. They haven't even announced a time frame or
Right.
prices. They just said what neighborhoods they're going to be in. And I bet a lot of Seattleites are even upset that they're not in their neighborhood.
Yeah, and they didn't call them fiberhoods, notably.
Well, that's kind of a Google thing for now, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. So Microsoft has finally confirmed that the Surface RT will actually be offered in retail stores, and we're a little late on this because this happened in the week that we did not do a podcast. So actually, they're already available in Best Buy and in Staples amongst other retailers. So I'll be looking forward to going to check out what is going on in Best Buy and see, you know, what their display looks like and stuff like that. So yeah. That is a huge win for the Surface RT, I think, because I feel like they were severely constricted in where they could sell this, being only in Microsoft stores. I wonder if this will open the floodgates a little bit.
Great, yeah. The more access to Surface, the better. Now, AT&T recently had an annual meeting with wireless industry analysts, and they are very excited to announce the launch of 4G in 2013.
Wait. 4G is banned on this podcast, Taylor. You're not allowed
Oh
to say
no.
4G.
Well, can we use 4G if we're actually talking about wireless speeds above 100 megabits per second?
Oh, sure. Yeah, actually, that's true.
Yeah, so that's what they're talking about. Never mind the fact that AT&T has been calling the exact same technology that they've been using for 5 years, 4G for the last 2 years for no particular reason. Apparently, they now have plans to launch actual wireless technology that will get real-world download speeds over 100 megabits per second.
Now I'm just waiting for him to call it 5G or something like that so we can get mad again.
They probably will. But this technology is called LTE Advanced. It's just LTE, but more advanced. And that will officially qualify it for the technical engineering term 4G wireless.
Right. So this will qualify, and the ITU will certify that this is actual 4G, even though they caved on 4G previously. It's still going to be confusing to talk about.
It is, yeah. We'll probably just continue to call it LTE Advanced, but it's worth noting that this would actually be 4G as opposed to everything that is out there now, which is not.
Yeah, that's right. All right, well,
And that's it for the afterburners.
let's turn off the afterburners, get comfy. You can unbuckle your seatbelt, Mr. Marr, and let's get into the end user story. So what do we got going on this week?
Okay, great. So we have a pair of announcements from T-Mobile. The first one was that they finally announced that in 2013, they will be getting iOS devices. We presume this means the iPhone, although details were very scarce. T-Mobile has already been courting iPhone users by getting them to unlock the iPhone and then bringing it to T-Mobile on a no-contract plan. Which is interesting because they are now announcing that they're getting rid of contracts completely and are sort of reframing the way that they sell phones and plans. What you can buy either a month-to-month plan or a phone subsidy plan.
So you can still do both, right?
Yeah, you can still do both. You achieve the same end result. You're signing up for a plan for a while in order to get a discount on your phone. The difference is they're being much more open about it. They're
So
saying,
it's explicit.
yeah, here's your plan, here's your subsidy, here's how much extra you're going to pay per month.
Right. So this is fantastic. I've been complaining about this for a long time that if you're out of contract and you're not paying off a subsidy, then you're basically being ripped off on your plan.
Absolutely. And T-Mobile is fixing this voluntarily. It's pretty great. The interesting thing, though, is that if you look at their plans, if you take basically any phone that T-Mobile is selling, if you look at the cost of buying the phone unsubsidized and then getting their regular plan, it's always going to be cheaper than getting the subsidized phone plan. You pay like an extra $20 a month and you'll end up paying more over the long run. I guess if you don't have $500 to buy a phone, that'll work out for you, but it's still, the math is right there. You don't have to sign up for a plan. It's cheaper in the long run if you just pay full price for the phone.
Yeah, and I've always been of the same mind with that, is that I'd rather just pay for the handset and get the cheaper service plan because these contracts have just gotten so ridiculous. 2 years is a long time
Right.
to sign away a lot of money a month.
So what do you think? You're going to go T-Mobile?
I don't know. They do have decent reception in the area where we're at, so I don't know. I'll have to take it under advisement, as it were.
Yeah.
But it's definitely something for me to look into. All right, well, let's not talk about carriers for the rest of the podcast. How about that? That would
All
make
right.
me a happy podcaster, as
I
it were.
will try. All right, how about we talk about a nefarious machine that can crack any password in under 6 hours?
Yes.
That'll make you happy?
That will make me, well, not the fact that they're cracking passwords, but just the sheer technology involved here is very exciting.
I guess it is pretty exciting from a technological standpoint. An expert password cracker security analyst built a system that uses five servers and 40 graphics cards, because graphics cards are the best piece of equipment off the shelf that you can use to crack passwords, just making random guesses. And it's much faster than any other machine, including supercomputers, in attempting guesses at passwords in order to just brute force crack a password. That is, just keep guessing until it gets it right. It can make 350 billion password guesses per second.
Yeah, so where this is kind of applicable, they make this big deal about cracking Windows passwords in under 6 hours. And while, yes, okay, it can do that, where this actually gets applied is in the generation of rainbow tables. Are you familiar with rainbow tables, Taylor?
I am not.
Okay, so rainbow table is basically where you take a certain algorithm and you pre-compute all values up front. So you have this massive multi-gigabyte table of values. And then if the person who was using that algorithm did not use salt, you can reverse engineer their password hashes. So famously, like LinkedIn, they hashed their passwords, but they didn't use Salt. So they got halfway to decent security, and people were able to use rainbow tables to crack their passwords anyway. So this kind of machine is really good at offline password attacks, including the generation of rainbow tables. Neat, huh?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I just like any password, 6 hours.
Yeah, pretty wild. It's pretty wild that you can do this for as cheap as they're claiming here. Now,
these were just off-the-shelf components. They can fit inside a server rack or a small closet.
I don't think there's a number in the article here, but this thing can't be terribly expensive.
It's got to be low five figures or less.
Yeah, so very cool. Very cool technology, although... like you said, for a slightly nefarious purpose, it's kind of cool just to see this thing out there.
Right. It is very cool. It's also very terrifying.
Yes, also very terrifying. So if you do have a database, I suggest you hash and salt your password so that this thing can't hit you with a rainbow table.
Totally. So this next story, a couple of stories all twined together, they started with me looking through my Twitter account. As every story starts.
Yeah, that's about right.
Now, I have a few friends who post things on Instagram. And Instagram has an API, or Twitter has an API that Instagram was using called Cards. And what it does is if you're using a native Twitter client, you can view whatever's on the card, in this case, an Instagram picture, from inside Twitter. It works on the website. It works on the desktop apps. It works on my iPhone app. So it works for a lot of news organizations have cards, so you can read a little preview of the article. And Instagram had it, along with just about every other photo service that's popular on Twitter. Last week, Instagram made the decision to remove their cards from Twitter. So now, instead of seeing an Instagram inside Twitter, I have to look at the tweet and then click through and go to the Instagram website in order to see the picture.
Which sounds annoying.
It's very annoying. It's as annoying as it took me to explain that whole thing just now.
Yeah, this is just wrong, isn't it? This is anti-consumer, right?
They're removing functionality from one of their most popular services.
And it all has to do with little fiefdoms that we've got on the internet, right?
Right. I mean, Facebook is now the owner of Instagram. They paid $1 billion for it, and I guess they have plans for it. So they just decided to take it out of Twitter.
Yeah, so that's kind of disappointing.
Right. So from there, I signed up for an Instagram account, and then I was very annoyed with Instagram, and I was still mad that I wasn't seeing Instagrams from Twitter, and then I left that alone. But then a few of my friends who had been posting on Instagram started posting pictures to Flickr instead and then linking it to Twitter. I got ready to be so annoyed because I used to hate clicking through the Twitter link to the Flickr website, and then they didn't even have a mobile website back then. And so I got taken to the main website, and the picture was all tiny, and I had to zoom in, and then I turned my phone, and I had to read it. But no, now Flickr has Twitter cards, so you can see the picture from Flickr directly inside Twitter. And they released that, coincidentally, the same week that Instagram took it away. Not only that, Flickr has now redesigned their iPhone app, and added more support on their website. So there is a mobile version of it now. They added filters. They added groups, all these different things. And that's great. And then the same week, they redesigned Yahoo Mail again and made it way better. And then I'm thinking, oh, yeah, Marissa Mayer has been the CEO of Yahoo for a while. Yahoo owns Flickr. They're coming out with all of these good things, just as companies like Instagram are taking features away.
Yeah, so and the new Yahoo Mail enhancements look fantastic. Now, I haven't had a Yahoo account for a long time now, so maybe I should sign up again and see what's going on over there.
Yeah, everything I've seen about Yahoo Mail looks pretty good. It's not going to make me sign up for an account, although Google's lack of app support and exchange support might make me sign up for Yahoo Mail. But I am loving the new Flickr app. I mean, yeah. I think Flickr is great. Forget Instagram.
Flickr has always been great, and they've just kind of been standing still for a while.
Yeah, they've been standing still as all of us have gotten smartphones. So
yeah,
Flickr sort of got left behind there, and now they're finally at parity. They have Twitter cards. They have a great new design for the iPhone. I haven't tried it on Android, but I'm sure that's coming soon.
Excellent. And there's a so they overhauled their mail app for the web, for Windows 8, for the iPhone, for Android. I mean, it's really quite the effort there.
Right. Now, the final part of my story is that Twitter is not taking all of this standing down either. They went ahead and updated their photo taking services and added filters on it, which I think is a little silly.
It's very silly. I mean, people seem to love putting filters over their photos, thus ruining their photos. So much so that Android's got it now. Twitter's got it natively. You know, famously, Instagram started this whole disaster that is filters on top of photos. And I really dislike it when it's used improperly. You know, there are some times when, okay, I get it. You want to have a little fun and do that. But it's just kind of overused. And I bet you over time people will back away from it. But it's extremely popular right now, so a lot of people are excited that they're adding this to Twitter natively.
Right. They also added a couple other features, which I think are a little bit cooler. You can preview photos inside the search apps and the discover features inside their apps, which I think is pretty great. And if you end up in a stream or an album of photos, you can swipe through them, which you couldn't do before. You had to go back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah, those are all very welcome. Very welcome, indeed.
Right. And finally, one more Twitter new feature that is slightly related is that they have been promising and they are finally making available the ability to download a full archive of all of the tweets from your Twitter account or accounts.
Right. Now, I almost can't believe that this didn't exist already.
Yeah, there were a few third parties that were doing it for people, but to be able to do it directly from Twitter is obviously a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, you push all of this text into Twitter, and then at some point you just can't get it back. I mean, that's a weird, odd thought.
Yeah, and it's even weirder when you think about it. It's actually, they get rid of the tweets that are more than a few months old. So even if you wanted something from a year ago, you might not be able to find it.
Right, so no longer, if you'd like to go back into your tweet archives, you should do so. Now, I've got to give this a try and see how silly I was early on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, me too. I'm kind of scared, actually.
It'll be a little embarrassing, huh?
Right. Now, I signed up for Twitter in 2006.
And so I think you
were earlier. No, it was early 2007.
I think whatever it was, you were earlier than I was.
I was earlier than most people.
Yeah. All right, well, let's put a cap on the end user stories, and let's get into the tip of the week. As usual, it's a combination of Taylor and Lifehacker. What do you got for us?
Well, this has to do
a Taylor hacker, perhaps, or a life mar, either one.
Well, anyway, this has to do with using Google Maps. Now, we mentioned that you had all these problems with getting your contacts into Google Maps. You couldn't get it. And another problem is if you are using Siri, anytime you ask for directions, it's still going to take you to Apple Maps. Now, there are a few hacks here that you can do. You don't have to jailbreak your phone. That's the important thing. But you can get Siri to open up your directions in Google Maps. Now, one is a somewhat complicated hack that uses your contact list as a stopgap to get you into Google Maps. Another way to do it is that if you just ask Siri for transit directions, it'll automatically take you to Google Maps since Apple Maps doesn't have transit directions.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's nice to see that actually happens.
Right. You can also do this without Siri if you want directions to someone in your contact list. You can just start in Apple Maps, look up the contact who has the address that you're trying to get to, and then ask for transit directions. It'll automatically port you back into Google Maps, and then you can switch from transit to another mode of transportation.
Neat. Well, anyone who has an iPhone should give this a try because it seems like a fantastic idea.
Right. So that is really a trio of tips
Yeah.
Involving getting Google Maps to work better on your iPhone.
All right, so moving right along, I've got an app pick of the week, and we've got the kicker, and then we'll get out of here. So I was reviewing all of the Twitter applications for Windows 8, the UI formerly known as Metro, and my favorite one of the bunch was MetroTwit. And there's been some controversy over the client Tweetro, if you remember. I think we talked about that on the podcast, didn't we?
Yeah, I remember it.
Yeah, so I think the best of the lot is MetroTwit, and it's still not perfect. You know, these guys are still trying to figure out how to use the Windows 8 APIs to do what they want to do, and it's not quite perfect yet. So that's definitely the best of the bunch, but it's still not perfect. So if you want a Twitter client for Windows 8, that's probably the best one. Although you might look at some other desktop alternatives as well. And MetroTwit actually also has a desktop client if you were so inclined. So yeah, there you go.
Great. And finally, our kicker this week is also an app, but it's an app for the TI-83 and 84 calculators.
Okay, what's going on here?
Well, see, they have this limit of any program that you're running on the TI-83 calculator can't execute more than 16 kilobytes of code. And yet, somehow someone has managed to build a version of Portal that runs on a calculator.
A version of Portal.
Yeah, Portal, the 2007 space-bending logic game.
Yes, the game is fantastic. How could they have possibly gotten this onto a TI-83?
Well, first they turned it into a platform game, so that helps a little. But then I imagine it was a lot of careful coding.
Yeah, this is pretty incredible. So no Angry Birds for TI-83 yet, huh?
I guess not.
Well, maybe that exists. I haven't really looked for it.
Perhaps.
Well, anyway, so it's extremely neat. We've got a link in the show notes for you. So
head over. And the video is hilarious.
Yeah, you have to watch the video. So head over here to thedigitalmediazone.com and grab the link so you can see what we're talking about here. It's pretty impressive. All right, so I guess that'll do it for this week. Before we get out of here, I should mention that we're going to have a thedigitalmediazone.com holiday podcast of some sort. So we'll be publishing that on the website. So stay tuned to twitter.com/digimediazone for the information there. And we're going to get a lot of the podcasters together and see what happens. So,
well, yeah, then definitely keep your ears open because we're both going to be on it along with, I presume, most of the other hosts of the Digital Media Zone.
Yeah, I think they nearly rounded up everyone. So it should be a lot of fun.
I'm very excited.
So, Taylor, if somebody were to try to contact you through the Twitter.com website, how would they do so?
I don't know. I've never used the Twitter.com website.
So, if someone, how about through an app that uses the service known as Twitter?
Ooh, well, that would probably be pretty easy. You would just want to open up the search function inside your Twitter app and then just search for me.
And what are you known by on Twitter?
My name.
Did you change it?
Change what?
Your
My Twitter handle?
Yeah.
No, that's at Taylor Phone.
Oh, there we go. Okay, I gotcha. So, yeah, if you'd like to tweet Taylor, and you should, he's at Taylor Phone, and you can follow me. I'm at Chris Hale Barnes. Together, we're at The End User, so you can also tweet us there. So thank you, everyone, for listening to the show, and of course, you can find more information, including the show notes, like we mentioned, at thedigitalmediazone.com under The End User. That's THENDUSR. DMZ has a few other podcasts. Have a look at Entertainment 2.0, Scene in HD, and the Movie Podcast, and our holiday special that's coming up any day here. You can also send us some feedback. Our email is theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can ping us on Twitter. Like I mentioned, we are at theenduser. Join us in the chat room as we record the show live every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Marr. Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you in the future.
In the future.